What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have a very special show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented and prolific jazz keyboardist. Through his vision for composition and production, he has become one of the top jazz keyboardists of all time. Please put your hands together and welcome jazz keyboardist, producer, and musician, Mr. Greg Kouroukas. How's it going, Greg?
Nice to be here, Spud.
Oh, thank you so much, man. I'm a huge fan of your keyboarding skills, man. And from one keyboard player to another, I got to take my hat off to you, man.
Thank you very much.
You know, Greg, my favorite track of all time that you've done, it's some of your older work, man, but it's one of my top go-to songs to listen to. It's Night Shift.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go, 2000.
You know, it's just a melodic track, and, you know, it's a really good feel-good track, man. And, you know, as a keyboardist, man, when I'm a fan of somebody's music, I automatically just start playing along with it, and it's just really got a nice ring to it. I love the direction, the arrangement, and the chord progressions that you use. It's just phenomenal, man.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. And, you know, for me, it's like when you write a good song, it should last the test of time. That's the real, you know, the real barometer. And when people, you know, hear it and they start clapping, you know, I start playing the first few notes in concert, you know, it's a great feeling. That feeling is just never, it's never going to get old.
Wow. Yeah, I agree. So, Greg, give me a little background and history of how when you started in the music business.
Well, let's see. As a teenager, I was playing in teen club rock bands, you know, doing soul music and rock music. And then I had the opportunity to play with the high school jazz band, which was a big band, and it was a pretty famous award-winning band from Bowie, Maryland, called the Bowie High School Starliners. And we weren't even part of the curriculum. It was really an after-school thing where we rehearsed a couple evenings a week and Saturday afternoon. And we would do shows. We would do gigs where we had a 24-piece big band, and we would play adult parties and weddings and bowling parties and stuff. And this is back in the very early 70s. And so I got a lot of experience playing dance music in the big band, kind of a mixture of Count Basie, Glenn Miller, and even a little touch of what Maynard Ferguson was doing with some more high-energy stuff.
Nice.
And then I had it, so that sort of gave me a little bit of a taste of the jazz feel, jazz chords, and then I started writing some of my own songs, and at the same time, the greatest thing about that band was that there wasn't a week that would go by where the trumpet player, a friend of mine, would come up and say, "Hey, did you hear this new record? I just got this Miles Davis record." Or the drummer would say, "Man, I got this Billy Cobham record. Check this out."
Wow.
Chick Corea record. So that was the real beginning of me becoming a serious jazz listener. And that led to me trying to play jazz. So that's sort of like the whole genesis of it. And I was very fortunate that I started writing some songs and got hooked up with an established saxophone player, a guy named Tim Ironman, who was the lead alto player in the United States Air Force band, the Airmen of Note, which is one of the best big bands in the country, if not the world. And these are guys that are in the service, they're in the Air Force, but their main job is to do concerts for high schools and communities, and it's just burning stuff, just a killer big band. Mm. Very busy in the Washington, D.C. scene and doing a lot of studio work, and he, at that point, was getting ready to get out of the service and wanted to start a band that became a fusion band called East Coast Offering. And so I was the original keyboardist with that band, and we, almost right out of high school, I started playing gigs around the Washington, Baltimore area with East Coast Offering and writing songs, and that was really my proving ground, were the clubs, the jazz clubs, and, you know, concerts in the park,
right,
and those kinds of things. With East Coast Offering, we made a couple records, you know, so that was some of my early studio experience.
Nice.
And that led to a lot of studio work in the Washington, D.C. area.
You know, on top of jazz being a heavy influence, are there any other musical influences that inspire you as a keyboardist and pianist that you are?
Oh, definitely. I'm very influenced by Brazilian music and, of course, R&B And, you know, it all goes back to my earliest influences were people like Stevie Wonder, great keyboardist.
Oh, yeah.
And Leon Russell, who had a big hand in a lot of the pop and rock music in the 60s in L.A. And then, of course, he wrote some of the most famous songs, Lost in a Masquerade and A Song for You. And he was also part of Joe Cocker's tour, Mad Dogs and Englishmen. And that's where he did Little Help from My Friends. And Leon Russell was featured heavily. He was sort of the musical director of that band and that tour. And so he had a real Texas funky, but with a little tiny bit of jazz in there on the chords, approach to piano. And that, along with hearing Chick Corea and Herbie Hancock and Bill Evans, really was some of the genesis of me, you know, kind of becoming the player I am today.
Oh, definitely. A lot of the heroes that you mentioned who I look up to, Herbie Hancock, George Duke is my primary go-to guy for chords and just the funk side of them. Chick Corea, you know, just a classical, just off the meters as far as a player. So I agree with you.
Yeah, and I would also definitely have to add George and Joe Sample and Les McCann right in there, you know, right there in the top 10.
Oh, definitely. You know, Greg, you've been out there for a while, man, and on top of playing the piano, you're also, you know, playing heavy, a lot of synthesizers on your music. What was it about the synthesizers that you gravitated to and kind of added that into your sound, into your compositions?
Well, I was very early into synths. When I was 16, I bought my first Mini Moog, and this is right after I had heard the Mahavishnu Orchestra with Jan Hammer, another fantastic keyboardist, playing, you know, the Mini Moog and the Rhodes. And so that became my rig early on, and I learned how to get sounds on synthesizers. And after that, it was basically an addiction. When a new synth would come out with a new technology, be it a two-voice or a four-voice, or then the first polyphonic synthesizers, the Poly Moog, and then the Mini, Prophet synthesizer for Prophet 5, mm-hmm. I would basically spend all the money I had made on my synthesizer collection, and I would, a lot of times, I would sell the one synth to upgrade to the new synth, and of course now I regret that because I had some classic keyboards, and probably wish I had a few of them still to this day, but that's kind of the way it goes when you're starving.
Oh yeah,
musician. But yeah, so that, and doing studio work, and being kind of one of the guys, one of the main guys in D.C. that could play synthesizers, and that was a very big new thing back then, and I've just stuck with it. And now, you know, I really look at them as the ways to use colors in music and to just add a lush kind of color to other people's music and my own music. I don't think I'm putting the synth quite so out front as some people. I definitely got that out of my system many years playing more, you know, fusion-oriented stuff.
Sure. You know me, I'm totally opposite, man. My whole foundation is heavy keyboard synth, and I'm really into fusion, smooth jazz, and funk. And, you know, I love the warm sounds of the Mini Moog. You know, I had the opportunity of playing on Jupiter 5, Oberheim, Emax 2s, the Prophets. And now I'm merging into the software world, man. We got the virtual synths and things. It's just amazing, you know, how close we can get to the, you know, the analog sounds from the 80s and 90s that I used to play on. And, you know, having into this DAW world is just amazing to me.
Yes, and I like the fact that you have plugins on the computer that stay in tune.
Yes.
And the presets, you just have thousands of sounds to just check out and just find out what works just right with this particular song.
Are there any virtual instruments that you heavily use on any of your tracks lately, or are you still leaning towards the hardware synths and the analog pianos and things?
Well, let's see. For colors, I definitely use Omnisphere a lot.
Oh,
and
okay.
I use Yamaha synths a lot. And when it comes to Rhodes pianos, lately I have been using a combination of plug-in and actually it's mostly modules. It's not the real Rhodes. I still have that in a big anvil case in my garage, my original Rhodes that I've had for 30-some years, but I'll never get rid of that. I was just telling my wife yesterday, because we were moving some things around, and she says, you haven't played that in a long time. I go, I know. In fact, the last time it was played, it wasn't even me.
Right.
It was I lent it to Bob James to do a record, and it's, you know, he used it on a few cuts on one of his records, or a couple of his records, but the last time he used it was the last time it was played.
Wow. You know, if you haven't had a chance already, Greg, I can turn you on to some really nice plug-in bass, Fender Rhodes. I'm a huge Fender Rhodes fan, and Scarby makes a really serious library. I mean, if you haven't had a chance to check it out, I suggest, you know, just at least listen to some of the sounds. And I prefer it over my Motif Rhodes, and I'm real stuck on my Motif by Yamaha, and, you know, it just blows it out the water, in my opinion. So,
well, that's great, because I just talked to a friend of mine who's using Scarby live with a laptop, and that would be an interesting thing to get into. I do use the laptop live for Ivory, for the acoustic piano, grand piano sound.
Oh, yeah, nice piano.
And that's been working pretty well for the last year. And, yeah, it would be interesting to be able to work on some sounds with Scarby. I know I should plug it into Halion, or maybe I can get it into Kontakt.
It definitely flies into Kontakt. Now, for your analog and your DAW recording, what are you using for your DAW systems?
I record for many years now using Cubase on a PC.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so I really have come up since the very beginning, before it was even called Cubase, and I've stuck with that sequencer for all of these years, and it's just gotten better and better, and these days it's really performing well. And with I just got a new PC with 8 gigabytes of RAM, so I'm finally feeling like there's not too much constraint on the power and the memory for using a lot of sounds, virtual sounds, especially a lot of orchestral sounds, mm-hmm. strings and stuff like that. They tend to really bring a computer to its knees.
Oh, yeah.
And now I'm finding that I can just load them up and keep loading plugins and haven't really stalled yet.
Oh, yeah. Now, you know, I used Cubase for about 5 years, from, I would say, 98 to about 2004, then I merged over into the Pro Tools world, and now I'm running Logic Pro 8, and I haven't looked back since. So, but yeah, Cubase was definitely my foundation when I started recording. You know, prior to that, I was using Studio Vision Pro on a Mac, but, you know, Cubase was a good transition from Studio Vision Pro. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, you know, for tracking a lot of your modules and your vocals, if you have any, or maybe some guitars and basses on your tracks, what external mic pres are you using?
Well, I run almost everything through either on the discrete side. I run it through a Great River mic preamp, which is sort of a Neve-based architecture.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's my go-to solid-state one. But I also have a Millennia STT-1, which is all-in-one tube preamp, compressor, EQ, and you can switch it between solid state and tube, transformerless or transformer. It's really a beast, and it's you know, the thing weighs about 40 pounds and has two rack spaces and all kinds of tubes in it and a big giant transformer.
Wow.
And so that gives me a really nice combination of sounds that I can just sort of like try to quickly find what sounds best depending on the input, whether it's a bass to go in direct or whether it's a vocal mic or trumpet. I really like the combination of, I use Audio Technica mics a lot, along with Neumanns and others, but I have an Audio Technica, I have a pair of 4047s, which are just the smoothest overall large diaphragm mic I've found. And you can put just any sax player or trumpet player in front of this mic, and it'll smooth out the sound where most other mics will tend to sound a little bit harsh and brittle.
Yeah.
And you have to sort of work to tame the sound. And I just love this Audio Technica mic. They're really consistent. And so that running into usually the Millennia, but the other choice on the other end is the Great River mic pre.
Oh, man. Definitely got some nice color there.
Well, yeah, and I have some friends who are pretty obsessive, and they collect one of every single mic pre that they can get their hands on. And I'm not quite that obsessive, but I think I'm pretty well covered between those two outboards. And I also have a Night Pro, which has a little built-in EQ to it. And I got that on eBay for real inexpensive, so I'm going to keep that. And then other than that, I use my Yamaha O2R96, which has got pretty good preamps in it. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
So if I need to do a whole band, I sort of allocate, depending on, you know, if I'm doing drums, I definitely use the Great River for the kick and snare.
Right.
I usually put, you know, my 57 through that or whatever. But then the final complement, whether it's the toms or maybe the overheads, I'll end up using inputs of the O2R.
So what are you using for converters or your sound card then? Are you using the Abugi stuff or?
The O2R is the main central hub. It's clocked with an Aardvark ArdSync.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard of Aardvark in a while, man.
Yeah, I still have my ArdSync too. I run everything at 44.1 and I record all 24-bit, and I just stay 44.1 right to the mastering. I go straight, no conversions.
Sure.
And so everything goes in and out of the O2R. Well, it goes out as a ADAT light pipe.
Okay.
In groups of 8 channels.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the RME Hammerfall Digiface that has 24 ins and outs light pipe. So it's very elegant. It's just the optical cables between the mixer and the computer, and the hub, the main hub, is the O2R96.
Oh, man, that's the best way to run it direct anyway, so I don't know, it's a really good signal. And clean, I'm sure it's clean, too, so.
Oh, very clean, yeah.
Yeah. You know, Gray, for your compositions, you know, your methods for putting a song together for yourself or maybe an artist that you're producing, is there anything that you special or you really tailor for the project?
Well, for me, if other artists come to me with a song, I'm usually really good at either helping with the arrangement, and they may have a demo that's just them and a drum machine or some crude demo, but I can really, right away, I can sort of hear how a slightly different bass line and a slightly different groove is going to make the song much better, and how maybe you want to take this section and stretch it out a little bit and open it up, add a little of a tension and release, add a little breakdown, or add a little place for dialogue to happen between the instruments. Those kinds of elements, arrangement-wise, are one of the things that I really think I bring to the mix for another artist's songs, or if we co-write. You know, they may have a germ of an idea, but I'm pretty quick at putting it into a song and making it sound like a song, or coming up with a new section that's related but goes to a slightly different place. I find that, you know, after years of writing my own songs, it comes pretty easily to be able to get to the germ of the idea that somebody might have.
Oh, yeah. And that's all what production's about, you know?
Yeah, I think that's true. And sometimes it's hard when I'm working on my own stuff because I have to change hats so much, and I work on a song, and sometimes, you know, I write a song and I say, I know this is great, this is perfect, and I can take it to the next level really quickly.
Right.
But other times there's a song where I got one section that's really good and I never quite figured out where it should go from there, and I'll usually just try to catch myself and say, you know what, just let it sit for a while. and come back to it later. And then eventually I'll come back to it, and usually there'll be a deadline, so that helps, those right. kinds of things.
Crunch time. And
yeah, and then I'll be able to get down to it and find that missing element for the song and get it together. It usually involves just having to clear your head or just get away from the idea for a minute.
Right. That's the best way to do it. You know, it's like it's hard to rush creativity. You know, you don't want to rush creativity. You know, you don't want to take forever either. But again, it's you definitely want to take your time with it and really have that Taylor effect, you know, what you're known for. So, yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, and it's wacky because, you know, you listen to some classic songs and in both pop and jazz, and you'll hear stories. Oh, yeah, I wrote that song in about 20 minutes, you know, the artist will say in an interview. And then there's another song that you hear and you go, wow, that is a really intricate tune. And then the artist will say, they might say I wrote it in 20 minutes, but they also might say, I worked on that song over a 2-year period.
Right.
And put it together, you know, bit by bit.
Right.
So it, whatever gets you there, you know, you just sort of got to be prepared for all the different methods.
Definitely. You know, now as a keyboardist, Greg, I got to ask you, man, is there some things that you still practice daily on, you know, just to keep your chops up? Or does your practicing and playing come into your composition? Is that when you really rehearse, when you're really creating and composing? Or do you have a separate time for your practice days?
That's a good question. And unfortunately, I don't get to practice every day. But lately, I've been doing a bit more practicing because I've got this jam session that we're running every Tuesday night here in Los Angeles with Rick Braun and Rayford Griffin and a bunch of other great players.
Wow.
And so it really is a great opportunity to stretch out and play more jazz. And so I find myself, you know, we do it every Tuesday, so come around Sunday, I think, yeah, maybe I should get my fingers moving a little bit. So, yeah, I practice. I start with the basics. I run Hannon with a metronome really slow. And
right.
I just get the blood going and get my muscles, you know, used to just, you know, trying to get less effort.
Right.
And that's sort of my focus right now after many, many years of playing, is trying to play softer and play more deliberately, but also without playing so hard. I for years I sort of was guilty of playing very hard and really leaning into the keyboard, really punching things and playing as funky as I can, but making a little too much effort in terms of the wrist and the fingers.
Sure. So you just want to add some dynamics to your playing style. I got you.
Yes, and then I play with the metronome, pretending it's on the offbeats, like a hi-hat, and then I play my exercises and scales as if I'm swinging them, you know,
nice.
With the jazz feel, and that just sort of helps get into the next step, which is trying to clear your head and just play jazz over changes without just playing a bunch of licks. You know, if you sort of have the freedom to play any scale you want and your fingers can change up in an instant, then you're more able to just sort of let your brain hear or just experiment with your solos. Because I try never to play just a lick, you know, the same lick in
sure.
my solos.
Right.
Definitely. I mean, we all play licks as players, but it's how you put them together and whether you are always open to playing something different and not feel like you have to play this set of licks exactly as you've always played them.
Right. But, you know, it goes back to what you mentioned before, you know, just changing those dynamics as a keyboardist or a piano player. If you hit it differently and different timing, I mean, that's going to chop it up and make the arrangement change anyway. It's still in the same scale, but, you know, it's an all in the deliverance, you know, like you mentioned earlier. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, certainly that and also leaving space and being able to build a solo and try to tell a story. Those are the three biggest pieces of advice that I've ever heard or gotten. And, you know, they ring true still to this day.
Yeah. I always, you know, tell other keyboardists, like, man, you want to become a vocalist almost on the keyboard, you know, with your solos. You know, they can almost sing your part out pretty much, you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, I got to ask you, man, finding that zone for creativity, do you prefer to be in the studio environment where it's more structured and you can really focus on the projects, or do you prefer the stage where you can gravitate off of the audience's energy?
Well, to me, the stage is a fantastic way to, you know, recreate what the songs that you've written and also stretch out and get sort of the real payoff from all the days and hours that you spend in the studio. And because, you know, I'm usually in the studio alone doing so much of it myself, from the beginning, the writing, and the arranging, certainly on my own projects, and most of the people I produce, I do so much of the stuff, from the drum programming to the arrangements to all the keyboard parts. And so when you're up there with a band, yeah, it's nice to be freer to, in a way, I'm doing justice to the original recordings because they're, you know, in a way, they are really the ultimate representation of what I thought was, you know, as perfect as it can be. You know, you have to leave a bunch of, you have to leave some mistakes in, which I always do. But, you know, for that time and place and for those songs, you know, the record is your documentation. And then when you get on stage, the reason that you're there and able to go out and play songs on stage in front of people is because they've heard your record and they really liked the record, either whether it's on the radio or on the internet. And so to be able to get that full circle thing and play those songs and have people clap when they hear the first part of a song, you know, I feel I want to be faithful to the songs. And yet, at the same time, there's always room to stretch out. And in any show, there's going to be a few songs which are, by their nature, more stretch-out songs.
Sure, definitely.
And the audience loves that, too, because so many times they'll say, boy, I didn't know you guys could play like that. You know, I heard this song and I thought that was a real mellow song, but you guys are kicking butt on stage.
Yeah.
And that's the funny thing when people say, oh, I love your music, it's so mellow. And yeah, there's a few songs that are kind of mellow and groovy, but on every one of my CDs, there's an equal number of songs that are, you know, pretty exciting and pretty not mellow.
Oh, yeah. You know, but these are the things where you get to display then in your live shows. You know, they get to see a different side of Greg. You know, it's like, you know, like you said, the CDs may be more commercial radio ready, but the stage is where you can really improvise and the band is doing their own thing and really flip the song 10,000 different ways. So, yeah, I always like the live performance as well.
Yeah.
So what's on the musical agenda for 2010, Greg?
Well, I'm doing a lot of different gigs with my own band and also with different artists and combinations, the all-star shows here and there, and that's always great. I mean, I feel like for us guys in smooth jazz genre, the playing opportunities are fewer and further between, and so these days, just to be able to get on a stage is quite an accomplishment. And if that happens to be with Peter White or Rick Braun, that's great, because, you know, I have a lot of respect for these guys because they've been doing it, you know, almost as long as I have, but, you know, for a long time, let's put it that way.
Sure.
And they have invested a lot in their own careers, and they've gotten to the point where it's paying off. And so I really enjoy supporting other artists in that sense and adding my little stamp to their music, and they always get a little spot in the show to do my thing and play my hit song, if you will.
Sure.
And that's good. And so all these little all-stars things, also with Michael Paolo, great sax player, who does my shows, and I play, he produces a lot of all-star concerts, so I play with him, and I end up backing up, you know, so many people from, you know, R&B artists, you know, Jeffrey Osborne or Brenda Russell or Aletta Adams. And the last thing we did was combination with Freddie Washington, Paul Jackson Jr., and Patrice Rushen.
Wow.
And so it's all cool to be able to play with these people that, you know, we've known each other for quite a while and from various little studio situations or whatever, and now, you know, to be able to play their music and vice versa is very cool. Yeah, and I'm producing in the studio as well. I have a couple artists I'm working with, and it's diverse as well. I'm working with the songwriter, who's mostly piano and voice, very talented young singer-songwriter. And then I'm working currently on my third or fourth production, I think it's my third, with a new age world music pianist named Omar Akram. And he is he's on the Real Music label. And I've produced and co-wrote most of the stuff on his last two records. And this is, I think, his fourth project total. And, yeah, we're writing all the songs together here in my studio. And now it's a phase of where I bring in the real musicians to play over my mock-ups, because we put almost all real stuff on it. A lot of guitars, real violin, a lot of percussion.
Nice.
And then the keyboards are mostly me and piano.
So well, Greg, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Man, it's been an honor having you on my show. Man, I would love to have you back and talk about your new endeavors with your new production works that you have, and, you know, just to chop it up again with you, man.
Well, that would be great. I really appreciate it. And all your listeners, they can check out, you know, whatever the Facebook situation. I love Facebook. People send me little messages, and a lot of people have just recently discovered my music through Facebook, and, you know, of course, my website
is
karukas.com. Love to have anybody come and visit that. Drop me a line.
Well, I'll definitely keep in touch with you.
Sounds good.
All right, Greg, you have a great one, man. Best of luck to you.
My pleasure.
Thank you. And a big shout out to Greg Karukas for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Again, a true honor for him to be on the show. I mean, he's an excellent musician. I mean, his compositions are timeless. He definitely knows what he wants as a musician, from production to performing. And, you know, just overall seeing the project all the way down to the equipment and recording that he does. Again, a true talent, man. And thank you again to Greg. And for more information on Greg, you got to check out his website at www.karukas.com. And that's spelled K-A-R-U-K-A-S. So www.karukas.com. And for my past and current interviews, I host a podcast on iTunes. So if you have an iPhone or a computer, pull up your iTunes player and type in the Producer's Corner, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And I also host a MySpace page as well, and that's www.myspace.com/SpudsNewZone. And again, that's www.myspace.com/SpudsNewZone. And for questions and suggestions, you can hit my email up as well at spudtootight@gmail.com. And again, I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.